Well, on this Easter Sunday morning, we're going to spend some time in the company of Thomas, Doubting Thomas. So what do we know of him? Well, he's one of the 12, Jesus' inner circle. He's a twin. And if you read John's Gospel, there's something of the dour and the dogged about him. If he was a Brit, he would be a plain-speaking, no-nonsense Yorkshireman. When Jesus takes the potentially dangerous journey to Bethany, it's Thomas who says, well, we might as well go along with him, at least to die with him. And when Jesus starts talking about heaven, he says, in my Father's house are many mansions. It's Thomas who says, Lord, we don't know what you're talking about. Plain speaking, no nonsense, Thomas. So, of course, it would be Thomas who wasn't there on that first Sunday. And he of all people would be the person to say, unless I see in his hands the print of the nails and put my finger into the print of the nails and put my hand into his side, I will not believe. So this morning, three no-nonsense things about Thomas. So please have that reading open in front of you, page 962 in John's Gospel, John chapter 20. And the first thing to say is this, doubting Thomas. Now, for a moment, get inside the skin of Thomas. These are the darkest days in his life. On the Friday, his friend and master was crucified. It was a public execution. It was a professional job. And Jesus' very dead body was laid in the tomb. And as that great stone was rolled across the mouth of the tomb, so all light was extinguished from Thomas's life. All his hopes and dreams lay in that tomb dead. A dead Jesus changes nothing. A dead Jesus means he's just like everyone else. He's as lost and as helpless as the rest of us. And there was no way out, no way back. Jesus is dead. Well, that was the Friday. On the Sunday, the women who went to the tomb found that great stone rolled away. The tomb was empty. The body was gone. But, and this was very strange, the grave clothes in which the body had been wrapped had not been unwrapped. It was just that the body inside them was gone. There were no signs of violence, no signs of disturbance. Didn't look like anyone had stolen the body because the grave shroud hadn't been unwrapped. It's just that the body that was inside it had vanished. And John tells us the reason why. Jesus is risen from the dead. And before the day is out, Jesus meets with his disciples. Verse 19, then the same day at evening, being the first day of the week, when the doors were shut, where the disciples were assembled for fear of the Jews, Jesus came and stood in the midst and said to them, peace be with you. And that word of reassurance is quickly followed by proof. Because maybe this isn't Jesus. Maybe it's a lookalike. When he had said this, he showed them his hands and his side. The hands where they could see the print of the nails. His side where the Roman soldier had thrust his spear. Who else could this be but Jesus? It's not a ghost, a hallucination. He's real, flesh and bone. The marks that were left in his body on the Friday are still there. And there can be only one explanation. Jesus is risen from the dead, and the disciples are overjoyed. But Thomas isn't there. Maybe that Sunday he crawled away to grieve alone. After all, he loved Jesus. Our dour Yorkshireman had a loyal heart. On that journey to Bethany, he'd been willing to die with Jesus. But now, as far as he's concerned, the man he's devoted the best years of his life to is dead. Well, sometime that week, Thomas catches up with the others. And of course, they have just one topic of conversation. Verse 25, we have seen the Lord. And in the original language, the Greek, the way John puts it, John implies they just keep going on and on and on about it. We've seen the Lord. Well, says Thomas, I haven't. The only thing I'm sure of is that he's dead. But on and on and on and on they go until exasperated Thomas says, unless I see in his hands the print of the nails and put my finger into the print of the nails and put my hand into his side, I will not believe. Say what you like, you don't convince me. Whatever planet you lot are on, my feet are firmly on the ground. And I know that dead men stay dead. Unless I see in his hands the print of the nails and put my finger into the print of nails and put my hand at his side, I will not believe. Those are my conditions. An uncompromising rejection of their testimony. I need proof, says Thomas, beyond all doubt. Doubting Thomas. Well, point number two, believing Thomas. Have you ever played leapfrog? One person crouches, and the next leaps over them to land in front of them. I remember watching someone leapfrog over a pillar box. It's not to be recommended. Well, so far, Thomas is behind the others. They say Jesus is risen. Thomas says Jesus is dead. But now he's going to leapfrog over them all. If you like, in one giant pillar box leap, doubting Thomas doesn't just believe, but he sees further and more clearly than them all. So what happens? Well, last Sunday Thomas wasn't there. After a miserable week, this Sunday, Thomas is there. Now the doors are shut. But verse 26, Jesus enters. Jesus came, the doors being shut, and stood in the midst and said, peace to you. It's not that the walls are real and Jesus is the ghost able to pass through the walls. It's that Jesus is real and the walls are the ghosts. Well, a word to all. Verse 26 says, Jesus, peace to you. And now a special word for one in particular. Verse 27, then he said to Thomas, reach your finger here and look at my hands. And reach your hand here and put it into my side. Do not be unbelieving, but believing. Jesus offers Thomas the proof he demanded. Jesus recites the challenge that Thomas has thrown down. And in that moment, everything changes. If Thomas had been brought to despair by the overwhelming reality of the cross, he is now overtaken by another reality. That the Jesus who died is risen. He's alive. He lives. And despair turns to joy. The skeptic believes. Verse 28, and Thomas answered and said to him, my Lord and my God. And with those words, he leapfrogs ahead. His words are few, but they're full of glorious certainty. This is worship, isn't it? The man who died lives, but the man who died is divine. My Lord and my God. Hands that flung stars into space are now marked with the print of the nails. The voice that spoke galaxies into existence now stands before Thomas and speaks to him. Do not be unbelieving, but believing. And Thomas worships my Lord and my God. And with those words, we arrive at the high point of John's gospel. Who is this Jesus of Nazareth? Well, here's the crowning revelation. He is Lord and God. believing Thomas. And so to point number three. Worth a second look. Now think of a clock. It's midnight. The hands are together. They point to 12. When will they next meet at 12? Well, 12 hours later, at midday. So from midnight to midday, for 12 hours, the hands of the clock make their separate journeys around the clock face to end up where they started, pointing to the 12. And in a sense, that's a summary of John's Gospel. He begins with the hands pointing to 12. So he says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him nothing was made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was, as it is in the original language, the Logos. In the beginning was the Logos. What does that mean? Well, you probably know it better than you realize. Because common to us all, including atheists, is that sense that there is more to life than what we see and what we touch. That behind the scenes, there is a something, a reality that runs deeper than everything. Well, says John, that something is a someone. In the beginning was the Logos, the meaning behind the universe, the real behind all reality, the life behind all life. The God who is there. And this Word, this Logos, John goes on to say, became flesh and dwelt among us. And we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. Now that's where John begins. The hands are pointing to 12. And so for the next 20 chapters, as the story unfolds, as the hands make their separate journeys round the clock face, so we discover who the Logos is. John walks with Jesus for 3 years. He gets closer to him than anyone else. He is Jesus' best friend. And as he saw the footprints that Jesus left behind, so it dawned on John that here is God himself walking on his planet. And now here in chapter 20, with Thomas' confession that Jesus is Lord and God. So the hands return to 12. We're back where we began. But of course, everything has changed. The Logos became flesh and dwelt among us. And having lived that beautiful life, a life full of grace and truth, he went to a cross to suffer and bleed and die to rescue a messed up humanity who've walked out on God, to bring us back to God. Jesus, the Logos. We now know the fire that burns behind all reality. We now know that if that fire burns, it burns for us. Because the Logos has come, and he's come to rescue and to save. And you see, as John writes, he calls his witnesses. John's Gospel reads very much like a court case. And he's calling his witnesses into court to testify as to the identity of Jesus. Perhaps he saves his star witness to the end. Unless I see in his hands the print of the nails and put my finger into the print of the nails and put my hand into his side, I will not believe. If well-known vegetarian Paul McCartney advertises pork pies, you know they've got to be good. If Nigel Farage says, look, I've looked again at the EU, and you know, I think we should stay in, then you know, maybe the arguments are worth a second look. So if our dour sceptic, if he of all people believes, if the man who said, I will not believe, and throws down the gauntlet unless I have incontrovertible proof, if it's that man who turns around and says, Jesus is alive, then isn't he worth a second look? Isn't this Jesus worth a closer look? And isn't that John's point? Says John, truly Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book, but these are written, that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name. Says John, here is Jesus Christ, the Son of God. And what makes him worth knowing? The fact that he is the only man ever to have been killed and come back from the dead. And because that doesn't just happen, it's God's earthquake to shake us up. To wake us up, to move the Galilean from a footnote in history to the central point in history. Isn't that worth a second look? Kat was a Cambridge history graduate. She was a staunch atheist. She argued that you can't use the Gospels as evidence for Jesus' existence. But then she never read them. So to strengthen her atheistic arguments, she decided she'd read John's Gospel. What happened? Well, says Kat, ironically, it was the start of my journey to becoming a Christian. I became convinced of Jesus' existence. And I've never looked back. My friend, what of you? Jesus, the Logos. Is he worth a second look? Maybe you're too busy. You know, you sit on the train and nearly everyone is on their iPhone or iPad. Or Banksy's latest mural, two lovers embracing, but they're not actually looking into each other's eyes. They're too distracted by their iPhones. We surround ourselves, don't we, with busy distractions. Are you too distracted to think? Too distracted to give Jesus a second look? Maybe you say to yourself, well, I'll think about it later. You know, after college I'll think about it. Or maybe when I've got a job, when I've settled down, when the kids are older, when the mortgage is paid off, when I retire. And it's always later, later, later. And then, of course, you run out of laters. And we found we bargained our soul away. Maybe this Jesus is just not on your radar. You know, as far as you're concerned, he has nothing to say to me. I don't believe in the Logos. And that sounds fine. Until, of course, life changes. A health scare. A near miss. A broken relationship. That why am I here question. Maybe it's the death of someone you love. Maybe it's even being confronted with your own mortality. You do believe in your own death, don't you? Isn't he worth a second look? Or maybe you've just stopped being curious. Do you remember as a kid, why is the sky blue? Why is water wet? Well, this one wishes to concern me. Why is it the birds on the electricity pylons, when they're on the cable, why is it the birds don't get electrocuted? Have you stopped asking? If John brings before us men and women who have become convinced about Jesus, men and women who haven't got religion, that's the last thing they've got. Often they were religious people and they've turned away from their religion because religion's about following a way of life. What they found is Jesus, who himself is life. And John says, look, listen to their testimony. And if John says, look, Thomas, listen to Thomas. Why would Thomas, of all people, be the man to declare my Lord and my God? And the sheer scale of Jesus' claims. Aren't you curious in the least? Or what about when Jesus says to Thomas, Thomas, because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed, happy are those who have not seen and yet have believed. Isn't it worth just being a little bit curious? Taking the second look. Asking questions. Who is this Jesus? Who is the Logos? Who is the fire that burns behind everything? Who is he? What does it mean? What does it mean for me? Why not find out for yourself? I have here a copy of John's Gospel, very small. I have a number of them. What I should do at the end of the service, I'm going to put them on the chairs at the back. So if you want to know more, if you want to read the whole of John's story, just take one. Don't ask, can I take it? Just take it and read it and find out for yourself. Take the second look. You see, John here talks about life, doesn't he? He says that believing you may have life in his name. Jesus is worth the second look. But I want to close with this. John here talks about life. That you may have life in his name. Life. Life is the one thing we all want. That's why there are so many religions. But then all their leaders are dead. So is there life in their names? That's why there are so many philosophies. People who tell you how to live. But of course, when crunch time comes and we come to die, do those philosophies have the answer? In a story by G.K. Chesterton, a student one night visits his philosophy tutor, a man of giant intellect, a man who's been telling his students all year that life has no meaning. So the student pulls a gun and he says, well, since life has no meaning, the merciful, the rational, the logical thing to do is to end it. So I've come here to shoot you. At which point his tutor jumps out the window. And as the tutor clings to the ledge, so he and the student talk. And they talk all night. And when the dawn comes, the philosopher who said, life has no meaning, says, I want to live. And the student puts his gun away. The point is made. I want to live. We all do. We're all seeking after life. It's the great longing of our souls. It's like trying to find a home, but we don't know where it is. Life. And Jesus alone speaks to our need. That believing, says John, you may have life in his name. You see, Jesus lives. He is life. And he offers life, abundant life. Life in the fullest imaginable sense of what that means. Life to all who believe in him. And so, Jesus, it begins when I realize where I'm at. That I'm actually running from God, the real God. The Logos, the God who made me, the God who meant me, the God I've wronged, because I haven't loved him, not for a moment, with all my heart and soul and mind and strength, and I haven't loved my neighbor as myself. The God who has put me under a death sentence, because, says the Bible, the wages of sin is death, punishment in that other place. But the God who has come down to rescue men and women, boys and girls like me. You see, says the Bible, if the wages of sin is death, then Jesus goes to a cross to die the punishing death that we deserve to die. So that all who trust in Jesus Christ, all who put their weight on him, they come back to God to enjoy life, the forgiveness of sins, peace with God, freedom from guilt, to discover in Jesus satisfaction for our deepest longings and needs, to find life in his name. Do you want it? I think a wasp has just bitten the dust. Do you want life? It's over for the wasp, but do you want life? Then come to Jesus Christ. Come to him. Lord, I've messed up. So Lord, save me. Forgive me. Change me. And if you come to Jesus, then like Thomas, he will show you his wounds. He offers abundant life to all, that not even death itself can kill. Everlasting life to all. So it's no longer death to die. But as he shows you his wounds, you see that that life comes at infinite cost to himself. And if you see that, then you, like Thomas, will answer, my Lord and my God. On this Easter day, on this day of resurrection, Jesus himself says to us all, to you, come to me. I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die.